I don't know what you think about Fox News commentator Bill O'Reilly, but I don't like him very much. You probably don't either. I did think for a while that he was at least consistent when he said things like, I'll admit that I was wrong if we don't find any WMDs over in Iraq. Well, he admitted that he was wrong, but that's about as far as it went. It was still the right thing to do. Well, we know about the sex scandal with Bill O'Reilly from 2004. On October 13th, 2004, Fox News producer Andrea Macris filed a lawsuit against O'Reilly in the New York State Supreme Court for sexual harassment. And we know about this, but recently I've gotten some copies of the deposition that Ms. Macris did. And I haven't heard this on any radio stations. Maybe it's on the internet. Probably is. I just haven't found it. But it's really interesting to know what kind of sexual fixations this asshole has. And so I thought I'd share them with you, with a big F you to Bill O'Reilly and to Fox News, of course. According to the deposition, Macris contends that everything began in May of 2002 when she was having dinner with O'Reilly. According to the lawsuit filing, O'Reilly offered Macris all sorts of unsolicited advice on how to deal with men, then launched into a discussion of vibrators. She says, quote, "Defendant Bill O'Reilly said to plaintiff Andrea Macris, 'And just use your vibrator to blow off steam.' When plaintiff reddened, he asked lewdly, 'Well, you've got a vibrator, don't you? Every girl does.' When plaintiff responded indignantly, 'No, and no, they don't. Does your wife?' Defendant replied, 'Yes, in fact, she does. She'd kill me if she knew I was telling you.' Plaintiff was repulsed. About a year later, O'Reilly entertained Macris and a friend of hers by regaling them with stories concerning the loss of his virginity to a girl in a car at JFK, two really wild Scandinavian airline stewardesses he had gotten together with, and a quote-unquote girl at a sex show in Thailand who had shown him things in a back room that quote-unquote blew his mind. Defendant then stated he was going to Italy to meet the Pope, that his pregnant wife was staying home with his daughter, and implied he was looking forward to some extramarital dalliances with the hot Italian women. Both plaintiff and her friend, despite were repulsed, but felt powerless to protest strongly. Despite informing him that she was not at all interested in the conversation, and despite her adamant refusal to participate in such talk, O'Reilly informed plaintiff Macris that he was watching a porn movie and babbled perversely regarding his fantasies concerning Caribbean vacations because, purportedly, once people get into that hot weather, they shed their inhibitions. O'Reilly blundered on, "Well, if I took you down there, then I'd want to take a shower with you right away. That would be the first thing I'd do. You would basically be in the shower, and then I would come in, and I'd join you, and you would have your back to me, and I would take that little loofah thing and kind of soap up your back, rub it all over you, get you to relax, hot water, and, you know, you'd feel the tension drain out of you, and you still would be with your back to me. Then I would kind of put my arm, it's one of those mitts, those loofah mitts, you know, so I got my hands in it, and I would put it around front, kind of rub your tummy a little bit with it, and then with my other hand, I would start to massage your boobs, get your nipples really hard, because I like that, and you have really spectacular boobs. So anyway, I'd be rubbing your big boobs and getting your nipples really hard, kind of kissing your neck from behind, and then I would take the other hand with a falafel whatever thing, and I'd put it on your pussy. But you'd have to do it really light, just kind of tease business." And if that wasn't enough, Macris says that the conversation was headed for a climax. During, quote, During the course of Defendant Bill O'Reilly's sexual rant, it became clear that he was using a vibrator upon himself and that he ejaculated. Plaintiff was repulsed. Now, by the end of October, only a couple weeks after the deposition, O'Reilly and Macris settled their legal dispute out of court. Two New York newspapers reported that O'Reilly had agreed to pay Macris millions of dollars, with reported amounts running from $2 million on up to $10 million. So, and he says that this was just a harassment suit and that there was nothing to it. Well, I don't know. If you pay somebody $2 million to $10 million, what are you trying to get away from? So from now on, whenever you hear Bill O'Reilly say stupid, oaf-like, repulsive things, as he does, remember that he's often sitting around with a vibrator up his ass, jerking off. Bill O'Reilly, a vibrator up his ass while he jerks off. Yes! This is... This is the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour. Now, I'll try to help you get that image out of your head. But, nonetheless, leave it there for a while, too. Yeah, this is Bennett here on Kill Radio. Peter Gunn theme played by Rowan Kirk in the background. Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how to do a revolution when we have to deal with things like Walmart and Bill O'Reilly and Social Security and all those other things. I don't even know what to do about it all. But here we are once again with our ears pressed against the speakers. It's time for the Impressionistic News, and we're already way into it. Oh, and I think I should say a hi to our friends on Upstart Radio, too. And our friends from Radio for All, who come in and give a listen to the archives. But mostly, this is for Kill Radio. Listening off around the world with the best-looking audience ever on an internet radio station. Bow. Bow. Bow, bow. Bow, 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 bow. Yeah. Aren't you glad that you listened to Kill Radio? Don't you wish everybody did? So the other sexual thing that was in the news this week was that Michael Jackson was acquitted of all 10 charges. And I had given a little rant on that last week where I was saying that I hoped that he wouldn't be thrown in jail because I don't think that he's a pederast. He's a pedophile, quite definitely, but that doesn't necessarily mean he like rapes little boys, holds them down, and does awful things to them, which is the traditional image of the pederast. No, he's a pedophile. He's obsessively in love with young boys, and he probably needs psychological help, but since he was acquitted, I doubt he'll get it. This is from DJ Fabito. Yep. Doesn't he sound just a little bit desperate? That's Risterio Michael by DJ Fabito or Fabito. I don't know how to pronounce it. This is the Kill Radio Thursday Impressionistic News Hour. The following is a little dry, but it's one of the better and clearer statements about the Social Security situation, which I think it's time that the Thursday News has to kind of take a bite out of this, too. So this is Robert Borisage talking about the Bush plan for Social Security and what to do about it. And here's just some common sense. It's 6:13 here on the 16th of June, 2005. This comes from about a month ago, I guess. Robert Borisage on the Social Security. Almost. Here we come.
I'm going to start with Social Security and then get to the larger issues. On Social Security, I'm going to just make four big points here. One is that the crisis you hear so much about is a fake, which is okay because the proposal that's supposed to solve it will create it. Secondly, I'm going to talk about why that's bad for Americans and for America. I'm going to talk a little bit about how Social Security's actual problems could be easily solved and the program could be strengthened. And then I'm going to go into why the president and the right wing are inflicting this upon us and forcing this debate. First, the crisis is a fake. Now, no politician can tell you this. Every pollster in America will tell liberals and conservatives that the president has won this argument, that you cannot get a hearing from Americans unless you admit that Social Security is in deep trouble. And if you notice what the president's been doing for 2 months, or now 3 months, is basically been focused on making that point. And he has driven, while he's losing his argument on Social Security, he's winning the argument on this, that Social Security has real problems. But the reality is that of all of the programs of the federal government, Social Security is probably in the best shape financially. It is now in surplus. It brings in more money than it spends. It will be in surplus for the next 12 years, conservatively. It has a trust fund it will spend out, and that will be there for the next 45 to 50 years. If you compare that, for example, to the Pentagon has started buying weapons that it cannot finance over the next 5 years. If you compare it to Medicare is already in deficit, spending more than it brings in, and its long-term projections are 7 times as bad as Social Security. If you want to solve America's long-term fiscal crisis, you have to solve the crisis of health care in this country. Social Security is a piece of cake next to that. If you remember the AARP ads where the woman's got a leak in her sink and the repairmen come in and destroy the house, and they say if you have a leak in the sink, you wouldn't destroy the house. The irony of that ad is it's not the real story. The real story is not that you have a leak in your sink, it's that you have a weak pipe in your plumbing. And 10 years from now, the pipe will start to crack. And 50 years from now, the leak will be noticeable enough that you'll have to do something about it. And now you're breaking up the house today to take care of it under the Bush plan. Let me just give you the details about that, because I know most people who follow this thinks that's incredible. Under the conservative assumptions of the Social Security trustees, and they must be conservatives, they're actuarially done, over 75 years, they assume a growth rate, a slow growth rate in their medium plan that is much slower than we've grown over the last 75 years. If you take their assumptions and we do absolutely nothing, Social Security 75 years from now will be able to pay every retiree 80% of their guaranteed benefit, and that benefit in adjusted inflation-adjusted terms, in real dollars, will be larger than the benefit that is paid today to retirees if we do nothing. Now, if in fact we grow over the next 75 years as fast as we grew over the last 75 years, including the Great Depression, Social Security has no problem, by the actuary's own assumptions. So this is a very small projected potential problem that Social Security faces in the out years that has that we ought to deal with at some point, that is not urgent, that is not a crisis, that is not a big deal, and we have fundamental problems we face in this country, particularly around healthcare, that must be dealt with right away, And so it is bizarre that we are paying attention to this. Now, the president has proposed a solution to this problem. What's interesting about the solution is he admits, and his vice president admits, and the head of the Social Security Administration admits, that his solution has nothing to do with the real long-term potential shortfall that Social Security faces. It doesn't address that. His answer to that problem is a blank sheet of paper. If you remember his State of the Union address, well, I'll accept any answer, you know, whatever people suggest, tax increases, raise retirement, whatever. Any answers on that. On the side, he's offering something else, which is he suggests that we borrow money in order to set up private accounts for workers that are under 55 years of age so that they can have a little bit of the money, as the president says in his poll-tested speech, to put in personal accounts and build potential wealth. That program, to pay for that program, he will borrow, the vice president admits, trillions. The Independent Center for Budget and Policy Priorities does the projections, $15 trillion over 40 years to pay for private accounts. Why is that? Because you're going to guarantee full retirement for us, for everybody 55 and over, and you're going to divert money from the money coming in from workers to the Social Security Trust Fund to pay for those private accounts. You got to make up that money to pay for our retirement. That's guaranteed by the president. $15 trillion over 40 years. That will triple the national debt. In exchange for which, we will get a program for younger workers that cuts their guaranteed benefit when they retire by 45%. What's interesting about this is everybody understands in the politics of this that people who are 55 and older pay attention to Social Security. If you're 55 or so, you start thinking about your retirement for the first time. And if you're a middle class or working class American, you've got a Social Security number you get in the mail from Social Security, and then you got a little bit of money maybe in a 401k or an IRA, and it's gone down over the last few years, and your house is worth a little bit more money, and if you sell the house and get someplace less expensive, if you can find someplace less expensive, you get a little bit of money there, and maybe you'll inherit a little bit of money from your parents. Everything else is missed except for that Social Security number. So you're 55 and older, you do not want anybody messing around with that number. So the president says we got to take that off the table politically. We're going to guarantee the boomers their retirement. Well, 55 and older, that's a goodly portion of them. And by the time we finish the politics of it, it'll be probably 50 and older. So you're going to guarantee most of the boomer generation their retirement because you can't deal with them politically. For young workers, saying we're going to let you put some of your money into a personal account and have a chance to get the golden ring to build wealth is a very attractive proposition, and they've sold this thing to younger workers, and it makes sense to young people, right? We're only getting 2% for Social Security. When I look at my taxes, for most workers, those are the biggest part of the taxes they pay is the Social Security and Medicare taxes, the payroll taxes. Being able to put a little wealth money into an investment account makes a lot of sense to young workers. They take it in the ear. If you're a young worker, you will get not just a 40% cut in your guaranteed benefit when you retire, but you will pay for my retirement. And in paying for my retirement, you'll pay the interest on $15 trillion worth of borrowing over the 40 years of your lifetime. You pay more than double. You get screwed. Now, most young workers don't know that yet, but we're going to win that campaign. What happens at the end of this process? There is only a set of things that are guaranteed by this. You take a guaranteed benefit and you turn it into a guaranteed gamble. Some people will do well, and some will end up in poverty and on welfare, if there is such a thing at that point. That's very clear. You increase risk, and you will increase poverty among seniors. Now, Social Security is America's greatest poverty program. Before Social Security, about half of Americans ended in retirement in poverty. Now, only 10% do. Everyone contributes to it. Everybody benefits from it. It is the program of shared security. Its administrative costs are less than 1%. It is remarkably well administered, etc. And, of course, it guarantees people against other risks. It's not just a retirement plan. It's not designed to build wealth. It's a social insurance program. It guarantees you against disability in the course of your work life. It guarantees you your survivors if the breadwinner loses their life and their children are still young. Those insurance programs don't exist under the private accounts. And those guarantees will get, according to Bush's commission, will get cut under his private accounts. It also guarantees you if you live a long life. Social Security benefits are adjusted to inflation over the course of your retirement. Private account benefits are not. Don't live too long under the president's plan. Don't die too soon. Don't get disabled. That's the president's solution. Now, this is obviously not good for the nation either.
No, it's not good for the nation either, Mr. Bush's plan. You know, the idea there is that it's guaranteed, and it would continue to be guaranteed, even though by privatizing the money into Wall Street banks or something, it's bound to be lost. There is no risk at this point, but there would be a huge risk if we went through the change, and then we'd have to guarantee all that money. So a pretty good breakdown of what's happening with Social Security from Robert Borisage. That's where we are. This is the Thursday Impressionistic News. This is the DJRX, and it's not a GW cut-up, as in last week. This is him himself, and this is called 21st Century Protest Song.
Tick, 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 goes the clock, it makes me sick. It tells the time, it says that I'm way behind in everything. Oh, but half a gram of common sense, another of experience, might help me to get off the fence. It's due now. Oh, but what can we do? We know that it's all true. We're giving in to you now, you are everything. Yeah, what can we do but give it all to you? Yeah, render unto you now, you are everything. Your $1,000 chair helps your posture, helps you care about your job which used to suck. Oh, but now you feel so lucky just to have a job at all. In these times, in this climate where collapse and decay are the order of the day. Oh, but what can we do now? You know that it's all true now. We're giving it to you now, you have everything. Yes, what can we do now but give it all to you now? Surrender unto you now, you are everything. And all the games that you play, they won't take the fact away. Oh, look, there will come a day for you to step out of the way. Accumulate the wealth and so the hatred that comes with it, for it is stained with the blood of a million limbless children. You accumulate the wealth and the hatred that comes with it, it is stained with the blood of a million limbless children. We'll be right back. childlike titles like Daisy Cutter and Tattered Rainbow come raining from the skies. Anti-manner in disguise, torture, rape and degradation at these the stations of your cross now. You know you really should consider suicide. I'll bear the cost of those chemical cushions. Keep you trapped in submission till you're bloated and you're lonely and you're old. But you just keep on eating to the size of freedom fries. Hell yeah, I'm in advertising, so I'm really not surprised. But you just keep on eating, yeah, 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 you just keep on eating, on, keep on, keep eating, keep on, keep eating, keep on, keep eating.
The amazing DJ RX and 21st Century Protest Song. That's a little scary, folks. General Motors announced that it will eliminate the jobs of 25,000 blue-collar workers in the United States by the end of 2008. The cuts amount to 22%. Of the company's hourly workforce. With that good news, we present the weekly news and review from killradio.org and the harpers.org website. This was posted Tuesday, June 14th by Paul Ford. This is for the Thursday Impressionistic News Hour of June 16th, 2005. And of course, this covers the news of the last week or so. 28 bodies were found dumped on the street or in shallow graves in Baghdad. 4 U.S. soldiers died in Iraq, bringing the total U.S. casualties since the war began past 1,700. It was reported that interrogators at Guantanamo Bay tortured prisoners with the music of Christina Aguilera. That's not fair to Christina. It was also revealed that American military torturers performed a satirical puppet show for one victim. 2 crows attacked a jogger in London, drawing blood, and a dead goat's head was found in the Maryland woods. Bombs killed 10 people in Iran. An Iranian official blamed the United States. Australian officials were investigating allegations that prison guards tricked a prisoner into inserting a sausage into his rectum, and Australia won an international sheep-shearing contest. The contest was judged on speed and lack of nicks. A flash flood in China killed 92 people, most of them young children. Dwarves fought bulls in Mexico, and in the Solomon Islands, a hermit who had lived in a cave for 40 years decided to return to his village after his fire went out. Scientists in California sequenced the genes of an extinct cave bear using material extracted from its teeth and now plan to sequence the genes of Neanderthals. "I think it'll work," said a scientist. "It is just a matter of time. Meanwhile, I'm wearing my Jurassic Park shirt." A study showed that the world military budget was about $1,035,000,000,000 in 2004. The U.S. accounted for nearly half of that. Recently released emails showed that Air Force officials knew all along that a contract for leased refueling tankers was actually a bailout for Boeing. "We all know," wrote an official in the Pentagon Comptroller's office, "that this is a bailout for Boeing. Body parts, including a leg and part of a spine, fell from a plane approaching JFK International Airport in New York City. The parts came from a stowaway who had hidden himself in the plane's wheel well. I heard pounding," said the plane's pilot, "but nothing appeared wrong." So, don't climb in the wheel wells if you want to stow away. It's just not a good idea. You either freeze to death or you're chopped to pieces. Scientists in Los Angeles created a fusion reaction at around room temperature using a pyroelectric crystal. I'd like to see the facts behind that. Voters in Nevada elected a former stripper to be a judge. We got to get rid of those bad judges. Officials in Dortmund, Germany, were preparing to host a game of the upcoming World Cup by setting up sex garages for assignations with prostitutes. And the something or other home for elderly prostitutes, a home for elderly prostitutes, was slated to open in Mexico City, the largest and one of the hippest cities in the world. An Italian court ruled that Sicilian authorities had acted improperly when they took away a man's driver's license because he was gay. The man's lawyer said that the arrest had caused his client to suffer hair loss. Researchers found that 1 in 5 women would consider having their breasts removed if it reduced their odds of contracting cancer. That babies are soothed by suckling the nipples of men, and that 99% of women are against comb-overs. A vaccine against the Ebola and Marburg viruses was found to work on monkeys, and surgeons in Peru separated the legs of Milagros Serran, the 13-month-old mermaid baby whose legs were fused from thigh to ankle. Some of the surgery was broadcast live. Pay-per-view? In Augsburg, Germany, zoo officials were being criticized for a planned attraction that will show elephants and rhinos in their natural environment by surrounding them with black men in grass skirts. Two women were upset when they visited a Houston mausoleum and found that the created remains of their mother had been replaced by a can of sour cream and onion potato chips. That's a good one. Janet Reno had a fender bender in Florida. Plastic surgery on women's genitalia was becoming more popular. Surgeons reported that they were keeping busy plumping outer labias, tightening vaginas, and restoring hymens. 35% of America's annual clam harvest was found to be toxic because of red tide. Oh, Jake! Scientists studying the Devil's Hole pupfish, of which only 180 remain, accidentally killed 80 of them. British pranksters kidnapped a Dalek. Doctor Who and the Dalek. From Wookiee Hole Caves. Iranian companies were preparing to build bicycle factories in Venezuela. Pink Floyd announced that it would reunite for a concert. But does that mean it'll be all of them? Definitely won't be Sid. And Paul Anka released an album on which he sings The Love Cats by The Cure and Eyes Without a Face by Billy Idol. Anne Bancroft died. She was in her two most famous roles were in The Miracle Worker, for which she won an Academy Award, and, of course, in The Graduate. Benjamin, do you think I'm trying to seduce you? She was wonderful. She was also Mel Brooks' wife. A new Bach aria was discovered in Germany, and Israeli scientists were raising a date palm from a 1,990-year-old seed found at Masada. Disney digitally reduced the size of Lindsay Lohan's breasts to make a film called Herbie Fully Loaded less offensive. I don't know how that'll work. And Microsoft opened a new Chinese internet portal that forbids some users from publishing personal home pages with the words demonstration, democratic movement, and freedom. Michael Jackson, of course, was acquitted. And now I wish that talk show hosts would learn that there's a difference between being a pedophile and a pederast. It's possible to be a pedophile and not be a pederast. Police in Nigeria arrested a cow for murder. There was a wave of Canadian canola robberies. And researchers discovered a formula to determine the humor value of a sitcom. R divided by D plus V divided by F plus S over A. I think that's the way you read it aloud. And that's it for the weekly news review for this week. I'm your faithless host, Bennett, and I'm still telling you, thanks for listening. Okay, the next up thing is about Chinese economy and how it affects the United States through our dear friendly enemy, Walmart. This is from Frontline, but it's rather poignant.
In towns like Circleville, Ohio, population 13,000. A Norman Rockwell kind of town, with its farms and factories, a solid citadel of middle-class America. Former Republican Mayor Ron Wunsch has lived in Circleville all his adult life.
The community basically generated its livelihood off of the industry that came into the community. Came in the 1940s and 1950s. Thompson Consumer Electronics was the last large organization to join. That came in the 1970s.
So you had good living standard, good jobs.
Good jobs, good living standards, and good people in the community.
The French firm Thompson, which manufactures TV sets, had the largest plant in town, and it was a top performer.
The Circleville plant, in its heyday, probably around 1999, 2000, was producing about 10 million pieces a year for the production of television sets. They made the glass components. About 1,000 workers, highly motivated, highly productive, very efficient plant. And at the time, it was one of the most profitable contributors to Thompson's corporate bottom line.
Steve Ratcliffe was among the 1,000 workers who rode the economic wave with Thompson. As a machine operator, he made up to $59,000 a year with overtime.
I've done this job for the last almost 31 years, and it's become my life. And it's the only thing I've ever known in my adult working career was that job.
But from 2002 onward, the tide went out. Plants in Circleville started closing, and the big Thompson plant suddenly faced sharp foreign competition.
We started to see more finished Chinese components coming into the market. A few brands come to mind, like Apex, that were selling at prices that most people couldn't even manufacture at the U.S. And they're being sold at the same place we all buy TVs, Best Buy, Circuit City, Walmart, and Sears. And, you know, all of a sudden you have this end pressure on the retail price, driven largely by the Chinese producers.
And oddly, Mayor Wunsch says, the Thompson plant ran into big trouble, not just because of the Chinese, but also an American company.
In 2003, they lost a sizable portion of their total production orders from a particular customer.
Sanyo?
Sanyo, I believe.
They lost the Sanyo contract because of what?
My understanding, based on what I was told, was that an end-use retailer told the Sanyo people what they were going to pay for the TV.
And who was that retailer?
My understanding is that was Walmart.
Walmart's going to say, if you want our space, you're going to have to match the price or figure something else to do. And so it forces a supplier like Sanyo to go back upstream to the tube, and in our case, glass manufacturers, to look for price concessions. But sometimes they're not there.
So if they're not there, then they go to China?
Then they go to China or wherever they can to compete.
Foreign competition hit other TV makers, too. In East Tennessee, I came across the very last American-owned TV maker desperately fighting to hang on.
Well, it's a constant struggle to survive. I mean, it's a very competitive market.
Right now, we've got about 750.
Yeah.
Tom Hobson is president of Five Rivers Electronics, an assembler of brand names like Philips, Samsung, and RCA. With foreign imports dominating the small TV market, Hobson concentrated on high-end, big-screen sets. But even that was no protection from the Chinese.
By the year 2003, they were like increased 1,100% in imports. So they just grew at an amazing rate. All of a sudden, they weren't here. They were shipping, you know, maybe 100,000. Now they're shipping millions and millions of televisions all of a sudden from China.
In three short years, Chinese TV makers had grabbed one-third of the high-end market, about $350 million of business. But Hobson was convinced he was up against more than just free trade.
You know, we're here to create jobs for our people in Greenville, Tennessee. And on a fair, level playing field, if we can't compete, then we go out of business like anyone else. But if it's unfair and it's illegal and someone's doing something to damage and put these people out of a job, we're going to try to do something to keep these jobs.
Hobson turned to Washington. He filed a trade complaint, charging the Chinese with dumping high-end TVs onto the American market, selling it below free market cost.
It's not fair trade. It's not free trade. The Chinese are pricing their products in a manner contrary to the obligations they undertook when they joined the World Trade Organization a few years ago. The Chinese system has built-in advantages that no one else in the world has. Their currency is undervalued by, we estimate, about 40%. Their workers are not treated fairly in terms of worker rights. The government provides subsidies to Chinese producers at preferential interest rates that may not even have to be repaid. It's a rigged system.
Chinese TV makers vigorously fought the case, including TCL. Tom Hobson was prepared to take on the Chinese, but stunned at whom else he had to fight.
What side did Walmart come down on?
Well, Walmart chose the side of the Chinese. And basically, Walmart spent a lot of time and effort at the International Trade Commission hearings testifying against us and our case.
When I asked a Walmart spokesman, he said he could not address this specific case.
On the question of dumping, does Walmart have a position on dumping cases?
I think we should weigh in if we feel a need, if there is an issue that we see that perhaps needs a perspective from the retail trade ourselves, or if we're asked to.
And do you see Walmart's position weighing in on behalf of the American manufacturers or on behalf of the foreign companies that are supplying you?
I think it has to be a case-by-case basis.
Why would an American company fight American companies and American jobs unless it was for their own profit? I don't understand that. Why would Walmart and other companies actually testify to support jobs in China instead of American jobs unless there was some benefit to them?
Last April, Five Rivers won its case. The International Trade Commission determined that Chinese producers were illegally dumping high-end TVs on the U.S. market. It imposed new import duties, effectively raising Chinese prices and making Five Rivers more competitive.
If you'd had a bad case or you'd lost this case, would you have shut down?
Absolutely. There's no doubt in my mind that if we had lost this case, this factory would not be in business.
But it was already too late for other U.S.-based TV suppliers, like that Thompson plant in Circleville, Ohio. Last May, the plant was finally shut down.
Did Thompson say that it was shutting the plant down because of competition from China?
Exactly. They basically told us that they could buy the glass from their competitors coming out of China cheaper than what we could actually make it for at our plant.
Suddenly, 1,000 workers like Steve Ratcliffe lost the jobs of a lifetime.
You kind of feel like you've been a failure in a way. You worry a lot. Like I said, I worry about whether or not I'll be able to find work with, you know, comparable wages and benefits and just what the future will be.
Job opportunities for the kids coming out of high school in this area today are very much lower than they were 10 years ago. There are a lot of people in this community who have families that the father worked 30 or 40 years at the plant, then the son got employed, and a third generation has been employed at some of the plants. And those are gone now. And there's no opportunity for that.
What are those high school kids going to do?
We don't know.
Ironically, it may be Walmart to the rescue. One new job opportunity in Circleville will soon be a new Walmart Supercenter that just broke ground on a patch of Ohio farmland right next door to the now vacant Thompson TV plant. How would you feel about working for Walmart?
I don't know whether I'd really want to work for Walmart or not, to be
honest.
Why not? Walmart's a big contributor as far as bringing in a lot of the foreign products, the cheaper made products and so forth. And quite frankly, that's some of the what's going on right now with what put us out of business is the foreign competition.
And for those who lost jobs at Thompson, Walmart jobs represent a steep cut in pay, almost half of the $15 to $16 an hour they made at Thompson, and a far cry from the pension, health care, and job security benefits long the norm in U.S. industry.
Well, Joseph Schumpeter, who was an Austrian economist, famous, used the phrase creative destruction. What he meant was that one mode of production, one form of capitalist economics, comes to the fore. It's more efficient, it's more powerful, it destroys, literally, other forms of production, other firms, and that's what Walmart has done. It has discovered with this low wage model, with a technologically proficient, its global reach, it is a sort of new model of world capitalism, really, beginning in America, the rest of the world, and it is destroying, creatively, but nevertheless destroying competitors and really other ways of thinking about the way the world works.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early?
I guess my question for you is Walmart good for America? Is this strategy of Walmart good for America?
I think Walmart is good for America. Walmart is doing what America is all about, the American market economy is all about, which is producing things consumers want to buy. And Walmart is offering consumers a wide range of goods at rock-bottom prices, and therefore it is meeting the market test.
Get down, W! Get in there! Get in there!
Well, if people were only consumers buying things, lower prices would be just good, but people also are workers who need to earn a decent standard of living. And the dynamics that create lower prices at Walmart and other places are also undercutting the ability of many, many workers to earn decent wages and benefits and have a stable life.
We absolutely believe that we are raising the standard of living through lowering the cost of goods for people. There are those who criticize us and make assertions that there is somehow a negative to that. And it's a premise that I simply reject.
In the end, is Walmart good for America?
If you want these low prices, then you go buy your products from Walmart. But what does that actually do for this country? It's putting people out of work. That's what it's done. And it's lowering our standard of living. That's the bottom line.
What a wonderful
I don't like the government where I live. I don't like dictatorship of the rich. I don't like bureaucrats telling me what to eat. I don't like police dogs sniffing around my feet. I don't like communist censorship of my books. I don't like Marxists complaining about my looks. I don't like Castro insulting members of my sex. Leftists insisting we got the holy fix. I don't like capitalists selling me gasoline, coke. Multinationals burning Amazon trees to smoke. Big corporation take over media mind. I don't like the tough bananas that are robbing Guatemala banks blind. I don't like KGB gulag concentration camps. I don't like the Maoist Cambodian death dance. 15 million were killed by Stalin, Secretary of Terror. He has killed our old red revolution forever. I don't like anarchists screaming, love is free. I don't like the CIA, they killed John Kennedy. Paranoia tanks sit in Prague and Hungary. But I don't like counter-revolution paid for by the CIA. Tyranny in Turkey or Korea, 1980. I don't like right-wing death squad democracy. Police state Iran, Nicaragua, yesterday. They say, Claire, please come and get your secret police off of me. I don't like communism. Don't like capitalism, nope. Everybody's lying on both sides. It's a joke. The bloody Iron Curtain of American military power is a mad mirror image of Russia's red bevel tower. No hope communism. No hope capitalism. Yeah. Everybody's lying on both sides. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The bloody Iron Curtain of American military power is a mad mirror image of Russia's red bevel tower. Jesus Christ was spotless but was crucified by the mob. Law and order, Herod's hired soldiers did the job. Flower power's fine, but innocence has got no protection. The man who shot John Lennon had a hero worshipper's connection. The moral of the song is that the world is in a horrible place. Scientific industry devours the human race. Police in every country armed with tear gas and TV. Secret masters everywhere bureaucratize for you and me. Aware, aware, wherever you are, no fear. Trust your heart. Don't ride your paranoia, dear. Breathe together with an ordinary mind. Armed with humor, lead and help enlighten. Whoa, mankind.
course, that was Allen Ginsberg, Capital Air. Well, that's it for the Thursday Impressionistic News on June 16th, 2005. It's Bloomsday, so don't forget to pull out your tattered copy, dog-eared copy of Ulysses that you keep next to your bed and read a couple paragraphs tonight. And it's also the 40th anniversary of Bob Dylan's song, Like a Rolling Stone. So you should throw on Highway 61 Revisited as soon as you can get to it. And in the meantime, check in with my music show this weekend, Saturday nights at midnight on killradio.org. You'll also find this show on Upstart Radio. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Sean. This week was rather simple. I cast my net out and got an interesting story on Social Security and another one on Walmart and the Chinese. And, of course, we started off with Bill O'Reilly with vibrators and ejaculations on the telephone. So we've covered a lot of ground. I guess that's all we want to do, right? That's the news. So thanks for listening to Kill Radio. Kill Ugly Radio. Kill Corporate Radio. Kill Radio in Los Angeles. Don't forget to kill your friends.